Residence 104.4 FM. This is the truth about markets. The very truth about markets. Nothing but the truth. Yeah, my name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. We're going to break it on down for you. Up, shook, boogie, and jive, partially live. Bringing it to you like it. Inside your mind. Inside your radio. Inside your preconceptions. Inside your prophylactic. Inside your bra. Stacey, are we inside your bra? We talked about areolas the other day, weren't we?
Yeah, but I burnt my bra. Remember back in the 60s?
Oh, that's right. You can see the little pit, pit. Hurrah! Pip, hurrah!
What the hell is that?
Morning wood.
Okay.
So anyway, you know, we got to talk about the G8 Live 8 scandal. We got a massive scandal on in the making right here.
It's a massive
cooked
con.
Up right here in the UK. You know, you expect this kind of thing in America. You don't expect the Sir Bob Geldof and his crew and Tony Blair and Gordon Brown to be involved in such a major financial global scandal as the G8 and Live 8.
Uh-huh.
Let me explain to you something very simple. This is all very simply explained in the following points.
Okay.
The following points.
How many points? You're going to make them up as you go along.
No, it's 3 points. Three points. 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make 3 points. By the end of the third point, you'll be saying, my God, you're right. The whole thing's a sham.
Okay.
Point number one
is
that the U.S. banks and the U.K. banks and the global banking community wants to forgive Africa of its loans, some of its loans, because the UK and America are suddenly very concerned about the black people in Africa. They're very concerned about them, and they want to forgive them the loans that they forced down their throat during the 80s when Citigroup was trying to expand into the third world and recreate the colonial period.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here we are 25 years later after sponsoring a bunch of dictators to commit genocide on people. They're concerned about this, and they're saying, we got to forgive them all these loans. Which they pay more in loans, they pay more in interest than they pay in food and education. That's not right. We care about these black people in Africa, so we're going to forgive some of the loans. Not all of it, of course, but a little. And then you've got the problem of the following, which is that contingent. This is point number two. In order to be qualified for these loan forgiveness, the African people have to agree to stop warring on each other.
Stop killing each other.
It's reasonable, isn't it? You figure, okay, we got to get them to stop killing each other. That's point number two. Now here's point number three. Point number three is the dagger in the back of anyone who thinks that this is a good idea. Point number three is this: UK arms sales to Africa reach £1 billion, quadrupling in the past 12 months. Quadrupling
since Tony Blair came to power.
Since Tony Blair came to power, the UK arms sales to Africa has quadrupled, and it's getting richer every day. So it's a complete sham, because you're saying you can have this debt forgiveness if you stop warring, but we're going to increase arms sales, which is a guarantee of more war. So you're never going to have to forgive the loan.
Exactly.
But what it is, what this all boils down to is that it's basically what you would call in business the vendor financing. So in other words, when the store lends you the money to buy the product on layaway,
okay,
they get to book the sale. You pay the interest on the money. You know, it's vendor financing. The vendor is effectively lending you the money to buy their stuff. So here, what the UK and US is saying is that we're so frightened that the poverty rates in Africa might be so bad that they won't be able to buy our weapons anymore. So we've got to forgive some of this debt to give them a little breathing room so they can buy more weapons to kill themselves, because we're in the death and ghetto business. Let's not forget that. You think the UK and the US are suddenly like, you know, loving Africa, loving Africans, loving black people? I don't think so.
No.
You know, they have a policy. If they were so fond of dark-skinned people, I'm not sure why the two countries would be killing 100,000 dark-skinned Muslims in Iraq for the oil companies on behalf of their neo-imperial empire. Doesn't add up.
No.
Why are they concerned about black people in Africa, but they're killing dark-skinned people, non-whites, in Iraq? Doesn't add up. Well, you know, they get to Iraq when they get to Iraq. Right now, they're spending $1 billion a week, which is great for the defense contractors, great for the weapons manufacturers. And, you know, then you've got so that's part one, the three parts of my part one.
Okay.
It's clearly a scam.
Okay.
G8 is unconscionable. You know, Jon Snow, who's the U.S. Treasury Secretary, was in Europe this past week lecturing on Europeans on how to be good capitalists.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, Microsoft, the biggest capitalist enterprise in the world, just about, in the top three anyway, uh-huh. with Bill Gates, the biggest capitalist in the world, richest man in the world, who is in cahoots with the Chinese, outlawing the words freedom and democracy in the Chinese version of the Microsoft products.
That's amazing.
So you got Jon Snow telling the Europeans how to be good capitalists and democratically minded, freedom-minded freedom fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Gates.
By, of course, one of his prescriptions is to start building more weapons, that they have to start spending more money on military.
Yeah. And
of course, buying UK and American
John
weapons.
Brain Dead Snow. I mean, it's unfortunate because in this country, we've got a good news presenter, Jon Snow,
yeah.
Channel 4. So
yeah.
People confuse those two. But one is Brain Dead, the American version, with the big white eyebrows that stick up like a cartoon character from Monopoly. And then the other guy rides his bicycle and gets his head banged on the pavement every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
And knocks some sense into him. He speaks good sense, that Jon Snow.
Yes.
And Christian, whatever his name
Christian
is.
Christian Amanpour.
That guy's cool.
Yeah.
That guy's cool. They do a good job over there at Channel 4 News.
Unlike the BBC,
which are total whores, because look at this. Channel BBC, okay, they fire Andrew Gilligan.
Yeah.
Because he told the truth about the cooked intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been selling like mad Jeremy Clarkson. His environmental terror show.
Yeah.
Top Gear around the world making big money.
Yeah.
So there's an arbitrage between the truth, the markets. The truth about the market is that Jeremy Clarkson sells because he sells environmental terrorism
uh-huh.
via the BBC. Andrew Gilligan, because he told the truth about the Iraq War. You got to fire him.
Yeah.
He's not going to help our share price. BBC, yeah. Ugly... Well, capitalist whores,
Jeremy Clarkson,
full stop, as they say.
Jeremy Clarkson doesn't always sell. You know, he was blamed for the collapse in sales of Levi jeans here in the UK because he wears those Levi jeans a little bit too high, you know. And
he's got a fat ass, too.
He's got a fat ass.
He's
and
got like
middle
he's in his SUV so much every day, his ass hasn't developed in a svelte form. So he's got those huge butt cheeks. Do they call them butt cheeks here? I know they call them bum.
They don't use butt. I don't know why, but they don't use butt.
He's got a huge bum.
Butt is better, though, because it ends in that T, that hard word.
It's a hard T.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love the euphemisms here in Britain, like fanny.
Yeah.
You know, it's soft and it's feminine.
Well, yeah, it is genuinely feminine here. In America, we use fanny for butt.
Yeah, in America, you use vagina, which sounds very clinical. And anesthetized. The vagina monologues. You know, it sounds like your open heart surgery at the local medical college.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun sounding at all.
No.
And then also masturbation in America is a very clinical sounding term. You know, yes, I was masturbating. You know, and in the UK,
yeah,
they use the
UK.
Very soft wank.
Yeah.
And, you know.
We also use willy. In America, you use dick.
Yeah.
Yes, everything is a little bit harder in America.
Well, this is where the soft edges are appreciated in the discussion of human genitalia. But it's not appreciated in the discussion of matters of grave political importance. So you have these MPs on the floor of the Commons speaking eloquently and florally about the protocol and the diplomacy of waging war against colored people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Around the world and killing them, you know, they should
especially those with vast natural resources.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to keep the floral language to the bedroom, and keep the hard language in the House of Commons, so people know what you're talking about, because they wind it up for 10 minutes. You know, my esteemed colleague, gentlemen of the Royal Archbishop, therefore I,
the Right Honorable, they
the
always
Right Honorable, you know, yeah, my God,
they always use
what's
that.
What's the point, dude? What's the point? Get to the point. Meanwhile, you got another major scandal attached to the G8, which is Live 8. So you got Sir Bob, who's now part of the aristocracy, the lame aristocracy, who's out there, you know, protecting fox hunting.
Yeah.
And the lame aristocracy, which is, you know, they're stuck in royal weddings all day long and royal wedding processions.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have time to actually do anything productive.
Yeah.
So now Sir Bob
mm-hmm.
is part of this mangy crew. Now, the problem with Sir Bob and Live 8, his little show, is that it's a scam for several reasons.
Uh-huh. Name two.
Well, first of all, you've got this whole situation where Sir Bob is quoted in the Guardian newspaper saying that his production company, 10 Alps, should be worth considerably more. It should be worth 1.46 million pounds, which is considerably higher than its current valuation because of Bob's altruism.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's helping these Africans so much.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's producing so many TV shows to help these black people.
Yeah.
That his altruism should be worth another $1 billion.
Yeah.
That's so, yeah, Heathfield's Ten Alps, his production company, is undervalued by 19 million pounds.
Uh-huh.
Because his altruism is worth so much. Meanwhile, at the same day, he says that people who are reselling tickets to the Live Aid scandal show, that, by the way, any show without Pete Doherty is a complete waste of time.
Exactly.
Because Pete, okay, if it's rock and roll and Pete Doherty's not there, it's not rock and roll.
And, of course.
It's an 80s revival show. It's an oldie show. And
exactly.
they're going to bring Michael Jackson in?
Exactly.
You know, Michael Jackson, they're going to have him stroke some little boy, and it's going to be like reminiscent of that picture of Saddam Hussein. Remember when he had the little boy in his knee?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's going to have like Michael Jackson have a little boy in his knee, like a ventriloquist doll. Who knows where his hand is?
Yeah.
He's going to be pumping and pimping for black people. He used to be black. So you figure he would have some empathy with what's going on there.
Yeah.
But he's got his hand up the tuchus of some white guy in his lap.
Uh-huh.
Some boy?
Uh-huh.
I don't think so.
No.
This is what Sir Bob is endorsing. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
I think it's a scandal. I'm personally mortified. Then he has the temerity to complain that the people on eBay who are reselling the tickets that they got through a scam for the telephone service that charged a pound fifty to get these things, and they had a huge bumper crop of profit windfall for the telephone company. There's another big shareholder of Ten Alps, probably.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're reselling them on eBay for £1,000 a pair, and he's saying, oh my God, you profiteering immoral people. You're killing those poor Africans with your profiteering and reselling on eBay.
Yeah, but right there, you're saying in the other paper, he's saying, I should be worth more. My company's worth more because I'm a good person.
He's mad because he mispriced these tickets.
Yeah, but also he's, you know, all the acts performing at Live Aid are presumably they're going to sell more records and they're going to make money. So he's saying he doesn't have any records to sell, does he?
Who was that guy who came out and said that the performers should have to pay to perform because it's
that was Damon Albarn from Blur.
Okay, now that guy makes sense.
He does make sense. And he did point out that, you know, we're so condescending to the Africans. It's like, we're going to feed you. We're going to help you. We're going to call attention to your plight.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, they have a more sophisticated society than we do.
How about giving Africans access to capital so they can borrow unlimited amounts of funds like they can do over at J.P. Morgan and Lehman Brothers?
Uh-huh.
J.P. Morgan and Lehman Brothers are reporting record profits, as are HSBC, Barclays Bank, all these big financial terrorist groups here in the U.K.
Yeah.
And why is that? Because they have unlimited lending ability. You can borrow unlimited amounts of money, and you can borrow money for virtually no money because the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and the Federal Reserve Bank in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. keep the borrowing rate, the Fed funds rate, the discount rate, the interest rates, they keep them artificially low. Very low, low, low. They say it's to stimulate the economy.
Yeah.
But really, it's a front for huge commercial banks to borrow money at very low rates, which they then can reinvest in what's called interest rate arbitrage at the long end of the yield curve and book free profits in what's called the carry trade.
Mm-hmm.
And S&P 500, biggest companies in America, 35% of their profits come from this interest rate arbitrage carry trade, which is free money, absolutely free money. The way to get rid of it was to raise interest rates. But the central banks don't do it because they're whores. And they want to they want to help their constituency, which are the banks.
Yeah.
They're not in it for the people. The people ultimately are getting screwed because when you give all this free money to a bunch of bankers, they are then able to go into the political arena, buy senators, buy MPs, buy new laws that make it easier to make even more money.
Yeah.
The problem in Africa is that it's not that there's too little money. It's that there's too much money. And there's too much money in the hands of too few people who then have the ability to make it even easier for those people who have too much money to make even more money, which ultimately is extracted from Africa. You know, people in the UK who do equity extraction from their homes to buy a new plasma TV set, this is happening on a global scale. These huge commercial banks are doing equity extraction in Africa. They're extracting the natural resources of
mm-hmm.
Africa to be sold in the world markets, not sold once, not sold twice, but sold 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times, 100 times. Now, is that possible? Yes, of course it's possible. Look at the numbers. The Earth, planet Earth, according to some estimates, very distinguished economists, the services that Earth provides, if you were to put a dollar amount to those services, in other words, the oxygen that the plants provide, the pollinization that the insects provide, the food that Mother Earth provides? If you were to put a dollar amount to all the free services that Earth provides in the current environment, it's worth about $65 trillion a year.
That's
at the same
lot.
Time.
That's more than the world's GDP
that's right.
at the moment.
That's right.
Yeah?
It's a big number.
Yeah. Okay.
At the same time, according to The Economist last week, the amount of derivative products in the world, which is basically a fancy word for debt.
Okay.
It's just debt. It's just debt that's floating around being swapped from bank to bank to bank to bank to bank to bank to bank.
Mm-hmm.
Is there are 250 trillion in derivative products.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The banks have unlimited ability to create phony debt, nonsense paper, swap it with each other, book so-called fees, which they then use to influence politics to make it easier to create phony paper, swap it back and forth. Ultimately, what's collateralizing all that debt are Earth's natural resources, of which the whole majority are in Africa. Why? Because when Earth was formed many, many millions of years ago.
Billions, I think.
Billions of years ago.
Yeah.
The first mass on planet Earth to start the process of cooling down was Africa.
Okay.
For this reason, Africa is rich in natural resources.
Yeah. Gold.
Gold, diamonds, precious minerals.
Yes. All this stuff for uranium and mobile phones, by the way. It's quite ironic, actually, that all the text messages were needed to be sent for the Live 8 scandal.
Well, text messaging, we're going to talk about that in a second, and J.P. Morgan, because remember that whole scandal that's going on there with cell phones. But you had all these natural resources in Africa.
Oil.
And, of course, this is the cradle of civilization. We all come from one common black mother, you know, the black man's semen. Is what started the human race.
Yeah, okay. Apparently they trace it back to seven women.
I don't care what the evangelicals, you know, claim. It's the fact is we've got a black man started the human race.
Uh-huh.
The black semen started the human race. It all comes from Africa. Then you've got the Africans who migrate to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And
they turned white.
Well, you know, the it's you don't have the same climate.
No.
And you lose your black pigmentation.
Yeah.
You become white. And because of the, in the north, of course, you don't have some of the environmental conditions, the extreme heat, which brings on mosquitoes and malaria and things like this.
Mm-mm.
And you also have these migrating humans settling down to create agriculture about 10,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And this led to surplus capital, which they traded back and forth, which is the beginning of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And you had excess of wealth. And then with that excess of wealth, in the 13th, 14th, 15th century, starting with Columbus, really, in the Spanish Empire, you had colonialism. Then the white people came back to the Africa that they came from, and they started to steal all the natural resources. And this has been with us now for 500 years. And you had the UK, the British Empire, was ruling the seven seas for a while. And they were doing the incredible trade and all around the world, taking advantage of this ability to load up big ships with natural resources, bring them back, sell them, resell them, sell them over and over again. This has been going on, gathering speed. Then in the 1970s, you had the beginning of the modern derivatives market in New York and Chicago with the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, which allowed to trade currencies and bonds. As futures contracts, which allowed banks to create even more exotic derivative products. And before you know it, all of Earth's natural resources, all of Africa's natural resources have been sold again and again and again in the derivative markets, which are now $250 trillion strong versus the planet Earth generating $65 trillion in natural resources coming from Africa, collateralizing the global world. And you've got these bozos like Bob Geldof and the G8 now claiming to help the Africans by writing off pittance. When they're just financing more arms sales because their intention is to steal these natural resources. It's been going on since the beginning of time. Nothing has changed. It looks good on paper. Gordon Brown looks like a hero. He's just another derivative-wielding banking weasel.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Blair's on the way out. George Bush is a complete idiot, and Jon Snow has had a lobotomy. And these are the people, and Bob Geldof. Talk about boomtown rats. This is a boom time for rats.
Yeah.
He's the biggest rat. He's the rat of them all. He's king rat.
Yeah.
He's out there talking about all the good he's going to be doing. He's actually front man for the neoliberal whores. Clearly. We saw that last year. He was standing in front of this huge stack of Monsanto genetically modified corn being dumped in Africa.
Yeah, and saying how great Bush was for doing this.
And licking Bush's balls for this, for this great favor that he's doing the Africans. Meanwhile, what does that dumped corn do? It kills the price of corn.
Yeah.
The Africans can't make a living growing corn, so what they end up doing stuff like growing coca plants and things that end up fueling drug business, which ends up fueling the money laundering business, which ends up fueling the banks again. The banks win again. HSBC, Citigroup, Barclays Bank, they're big money launderers, aren't they? There's no question about this. Look at their profits. They can't make the profits that they make unless they're getting these profits from ways that are not in tune with the overall economy, as Warren Buffett has said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
second richest man in the world.
You know, you can't make more money in your business that is radically a higher multiple than the rate of inflation, because that's the rate at which people are making money. So if inflation is 3 or 4% and you're making 10, 12, 15% on your capital, you're doing fantastic. You're making 3 or 4 or 5 times inflation. But when these banks come in and they say we're making 35% profits growth, it's because they're operating outside of the economy. They're operating in the black economy, the black market.
Mm-hmm.
Money laundering, clearly. Predatory lending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is a huge business now.
Yeah,
you know, forcing homeless people to take on huge debt, forcing Africans. You know, this is the whole thing about the African thing, is that at the end of the day, you know, it's going to end up with more debt, more cruelty, more genocide, more war, which is this is just a blip in the screen. It looks good. Bono, he is now a banker at a private equity firm. He's a crook now. He joined the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Geldof is a crook. Basically, he's a front man for the banking crooks, the banking cartel.
Mm-hmm.
His own band is suing him.
Boomtown Rats, yes. They say that he's stole, basically denied them their royalties.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. You know, he's a copyright cartel. These performers at Live 8, if they really wanted to help Africa, they should lobby the U.S. Congress to repeal pernicious, dangerous copyright laws from being the way that they are now, which gives perpetual copyright that fuels monopolism and predatory capitalism.
Instead,
and they should give the royalties to Africans.
Yeah.
Or they should set up an infrastructure to allow a more greater hearing of music and culture from Africa to get into the mainstream
mm-hmm.
media. But that would mean dismantling the cartels that the record labels and the music and the Hollywood studios have put in place to prevent competition. They're anti-competition.
Yeah.
You know, Jon Snow is anti-competitive.
Exactly.
He's the anti-Christ.
And speaking of Africa, had they just allowed... Well, Elton John, by the way, is performing at Live 8. And had they just allowed the Africans to have the rights to the Lion King, which they wrote, by the way, and Disney has denied them. They paid the guy, his family, by the way, they paid him like $50.
That's right.
For the Lion King song.
The Lion King song.
And it's made billions.
Yeah, what is that song? How does it go? The lion sleeps tonight.
Yeah, it was originally in African,
yeah.
His African language.
Right.
And he wrote this, he sang this as he was hunting a lion.
Right.
And, you know, but with out of respect, it's a song of love for the mighty lion.
Yeah. Well, why doesn't Disney pay the Africans the money they owe for stealing their song?
Because it would set a precedent.
Why doesn't Monsanto pay the Africans the money they owe them from stealing their seeds?
Biopiracy.
Why don't the white people pay the black people the money they owe them?
Exactly. But did you see actually Brazil? Because Brazil has become quite strong in this whole third world reassertion of their rights. And Brazil is leading the way of saying that with all these patents that Monsanto especially are patenting third world foodstuffs.
Yeah.
So they're trying to, Brazil is lobbying to have all new patents on food to have to say where the food actually comes from or where the seed actually comes from.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to steal any, you know, third world sort of.
Brazil, Latin America, they're pushing back against the neoliberal hordes from America and the UK.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
In Venezuela and Peru. You know, we just read this story about, not Peru, but...
Peru and Bolivia.
And Bolivia.
Apparently, a shock. For the first time in the last 100 years, coca production is up. And, well, this is what America alleges anyway via the Financial Times. And we think it's just a front to go in there, just kind of like these front, this whole supposed link between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda, which, of course, never happened. And, of course, they never had WMD. But apparently, there's too much cocaine coming out of Bolivia and Peru, where, lo and behold, the peasants seem to be rising up and demanding democracy. But America can't say, oh, we're against democracy and blow them away. But they can say, oh, we're against cocaine and blow them away.
Yeah, John Snow lecturing Europeans and being democratic. Meanwhile, the only true democratic movement is happening in Central and South America and places like Bolivia and Peru. Mm-hmm. And America's blowing them up.
Yeah, they're not happy.
They're pumping up the story, the cocaine story.
Yeah.
The war on drugs, remember that one? That was came before the war on terror.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Meanwhile, Afghanistan, heroin production's never been higher.
No.
More people in London dying of heroin overdose than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the war on drugs has been won by the drug lords.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to that war.
Yeah.
You know, America lost that war.
Yeah.
America lost the Vietnam War.
Uh-huh.
America is losing the global competition war, like with China and India.
Mm-hmm.
America has 4.8% of the world population. They've got something like 32% of the world waste quotient. If there was no America, there would be less garbage in the world. The world is rejecting American garbageism, which is really when you break down the economics of so-called American capitalism, that's what you end up with, a lot of garbage. And Live 8 and G8 are just extensions to promote American garbageism. And nobody wants that garbage.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, actually,
and without Pete Daugherty, there should be a huge boycott of this event.
Exactly. Wait, by the way, you know, the thing is, if Pete Daugherty isn't there, the one attractive British woman is not going to be there.
Yeah, that one attractive British woman, Kate Moss, is not going to be there. Okay?
That's going to be a disaster.
So you're just going to have your typical British, inbred, kind of haggard-looking, obese, pimply, spotty Jeremy Clarkson lookalike.
But female lookalike. But anyway.
He's a man?
Jeremy Clarkson is a man. He has
he's
a fat
got tits,
ass.
Though. He himself claims he has tits.
Does he?
Yeah, he said he had to get rid of these breasts. He has breasts. Because he's
probably downing all that Monsanto milk.
Exactly. So he's got a fat ass and breasts.
Anyway, did you know that Clear Channel is the one sponsoring Live 8?
Of course. They're, they censored the Dixie Chicks. Because they had the nerve to suggest that maybe the war in Iraq was not a good move.
Yes, I forgot about that.
You know,
yeah.
It's incredible. The Dixie Chicks came out and they said that the war in Iraq is highly dubious. And Clear Channel, they have a monopoly in radio broadcasting in America, so they banned the Dixie Chicks.
Mm-hmm.
So their careers are now, you know, at that time looking bad, looking like they were going to have to fold up their tents and move out of town.
How did they have to save
themselves?
How
did they have to save themselves? How did they redeem themselves? They posed nude. Uh-huh. An Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
So one giant leap backwards for women.
Yeah.
You know, what's the message there? Women, you have equal rights, but unless you play ball, you're going to have to get naked on a big coast-to-coast news magazine and flash your tits.
When times get tough, women always have to get naked. That's what happened to those, remember the Enron ladies?
Yeah.
All those Enron employees who lost their entire life savings and
That's
their
right.
pension funds. All those women had to get naked for Playboy.
The women of Enron for Playboy.
Uh-huh.
They redeemed themselves. It proved that they were good patriotic Americans.
Yeah.
Because evangelicals couldn't drool hard enough over the women of Enron issue when they're, you know, taking their little breaks from their evangelical movement there in Vegas. Yeah, you know, the thing about they're against evolution, really, because they haven't evolved.
Who? Enron?
The evangelicals.
Oh, in America.
Yeah, they're against evolution. Because they haven't evolved. I mean,
no.
I'd be against it, too, if I was still stuck in the, some coven somewhere, some witch's coven in the woods, praying to, some rock or something.
Speaking of evangelicals, you know, we have a big new fan group forming on gentlechristianmothers.com.
Oh, yeah, we're getting hits from Gentle Christian Mothers on our website.
Yeah, on our podcast here. So, you know what? If you go there, try to sign up. You'll see all these questions that you have to fill out. Their number one priority, though, is that you have to promise that you'll never ever hit a child.
Mm.
And then you also have to in order to join this whole this group, Gentle Christian Mothers, you have to say why you know you are saved.
Yeah.
So.
How do you know you've been saved?
I don't know. How would one know that you're saved? Saved from what? Saved from this.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I saw the little plastic Jesus on my dashboard, I'd say I'm probably saved. You know,
yeah.
How did that get there? It wasn't there a minute ago. Yeah. Jesus came into my life. I'm saved.
It probably came in the your Happy Meal.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I knew I was saved. I was at McDonald's. I got a Happy Meal with a little plastic Jesus inside. And I said, I must be saved. You know, for a country that's so hell-bent on being saved, they've got the lowest savings rate in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just collapsing. It's less than 1%.
And that's not good. So Americans have the lowest savings rate in the world, less than 1%.
Uh-huh. Guess what China's is. You'll never believe it.
I don't know. What is it?
Guess. Just guess.
12%.
No. Guess
what?
Again.
What? I'm running out of guesses. I don't know.
It's 43%.
Well, this is what's happening.
That's amazing.
How can you have a low savings rate and be the world's biggest consumers?
Exactly.
How do you do that?
You're in debt.
Exactly.
It's called debt.
So where does that money come from?
And then they repackage it.
Where does it come from?
They repackage it and sell it as GDP growth.
Yeah. And where does the money come from?
It comes from Africa.
It comes from China.
It comes from China.
Exactly. That's China's providing the world with the global savings.
Uh-huh.
They provide the fuel for Americans to consume beyond their means. The Americans consume more than they make. Savings rate's near zero. Even despite their all the saving that Jesus is doing there, the savings rate is at rock bottom.
Yeah, they said something.
If Jesus was really into saving America, they'd have a higher savings rate. I sense a discrepancy there.
It was something like 40 cents out of every $100 that an American makes, they say.
I don't know. Jesus is not happy with that. You're going to have to sell your Bible on eBay for food.
Yeah.
For your food. The savings, so it comes from China, it comes from India. That's who's actually providing the world with the savings rate. So in response, and to say thank you to the world for providing the money to create the consumer binge-aholics in the U.S. are killing the world environment with their overconsumption. To say thank you to people in Europe and Asia for providing all the money that they spend, they got guys like Jon Snow coming over to lecture Europeans on being good capitalists.
Yeah.
Without the Europeans for providing the savings rate, for America is to consume like drunk sailors on leave, there would be no GDP growth in America. There would be no productivity growth in America. And Jon Snow is basically...
Kiss your butt.
He can flate me right here on the air.
Well, the savings rate, by the way, for the EU is about 12%. So
that's very high. You see, the typical EU person, I mean, in France, where we spend most of our time, then we take the Eurostar over here on the weekends to do this show.
Mm-hmm. We have to come over on the weekends because there are no immigration officials working on the weekend due to the privatized service there. And, you know, we have to come in illegally.
We come over
clinging onto the side of the Eurostar.
That's right. We cling to the bottom
of
the Eurostar.
It's better than clinging to the bottom of a plane because, you know, these guys are always dropping off. Somebody dropped off a plane in New York just recently.
Really?
Yeah, they froze to death. I think they flew from India or somewhere. You know, it's a very long flight.
I always lose my hat when I'm clinging to the wing of an airplane at 30,000 feet.
That's desperate to fly on the outside of a plane for 10 hours.
It's like Dr. Strangelove. You know, he's at the end there. Yee-haw!
Yeah, but it must be cold because, you know, you look on that little TV screen and they always say what the wind speed is and what the air temperature. It's always like negative 35 degrees centigrade.
You know, somehow I'm not buying the whole idea that there was a man clung to a wing of an airplane at 30,000 feet trying to fly his way.
They do. This happens all the time. They cling onto the wheel.
Yeah.
So when the wheel goes up, they go inside.
I see, but it's
still freezing cold out there.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Yeah. Some people do survive. A few have.
Wow.
They fly from Africa. Heathrow, all the time, people are falling out of the plane. So when the wheel comes down, that's why the body part falls out, is because they've been stuck in there. You know, you're shocked.
So, like, when these planes that come in over London, and of course London has no laws against keeping planes flying directly over all the homes in London,
it's
dumping
so
millions
loud.
Of gallons of jet fuel in people's face.
Yeah.
So occasionally the odd immigrant falls out of the sky and lands on your SUV.
Yeah.
Because they're clinging to the wheels.
Speaking of
SUVs. So the wheels come down as they're making their approach over Holloway Road.
Yeah.
And some immigrant falls in your head. Frozen immigrants.
Yeah.
And, of course, the meat standards in the UK are pretty low, so they send them over to some local kebab shop.
Exactly.
Well, when you see, you go by a kebab shop and you say, that looks like somebody's leg. The thing that they're slicing off of.
Yeah.
That probably is somebody's leg.
Exactly.
It's an immigrant that fell from the sky frozen, pre-frozen immigrant meat on the kebab spit.
Yeah.
You get a kebab sandwich.
Yeah.
You put a little tomato and some sashimi sauce. What do they call
it? It tastes just like chicken. Tahini sauce. It's tahini sauce.
Yeah, it tastes exactly like chicken.
It tastes like just like chicken. Everything tastes like chicken. But
yeah, Residence 104.4. My name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. We're here every Saturday night breaking it down for you on The Truth About Markets, the show that really lets it all hang out.
And your hashish has not been laced with anything too strong, because the fact is we are still here, and it's 35 minutes into the show. We're here for a whole hour.
That's right. We got an hour show.
People might be coming down from some high and go, fuck, man, I'm so stoned because they're still there.
I'm having deja vu.
They're still there.
Don't they come in with that music by now? I mean, what's happening? This immigrant fell in my house, and the show keeps going on. The whole thing's falling apart. I got an ASBO. This show should be called the Liquid ASBO.
Okay.
It's Audio ASBO. This
audio
is the Audio
ASBO.
It's Audio ASBO. We should get an ASBO for this show because we're totally antisocial. You know, except that the testicle face Clark dude, he probably doesn't understand half of what we're saying because we're actually, you know, are talking about finance.
Uh-huh.
And down there in the House of Commons, they just talk about how they're going to kill Africans with debt.
Yeah, nobody in the Labor Party understands finance.
Nobody understands government. They all they understand is that the people who buy their votes are rich. The people who get them in office are rich. That's what they understand about finance.
Yeah.
Who's this guy, Clark? Clark, the Home Office guy.
Charles Clark. Yeah. You claim he looks like a testicle.
No, his face. I saw that cartoon in one of the British newspapers.
Oh, yeah, Steve Bell.
Yeah, they show his jowls as...
a big penis.
No, that's testicles or scrotum. Scrotum.
Scrotum.
Scrotum face, scrotum. They call them.
Yeah.
So it's just something Steve Bell uses, who's a very good... So we're like Audio ASBO. Audio ASBO could be a new name for this show. Audio ASBO.
Yeah, well,
Audio
you
ASBO.
Know...
Podcasting.
Apparently, the judges hand out ASBOs. They've only turned down 2%. So if anybody out there wants to...
send me an ASBO.
A complaint.
They can flake me. Why give me an ASBO? like I really care. You know, I'm an American. I'll buy your house and put you on the street and sell you and resell you 5,000 times before I even know which way is which.
Okay.
I'll sell you and your family. I'll extract all your internal organs and sell them on eBay. Take that money. Buy your grandma. Do the same thing with her. Whole family. I'll leverage your body parts.
It sounds like Eastern European thing here. Did you hear this story about spray-on mud, the ultimate accessory for city 4x4 drivers?
I thought this was another one of these porno stories.
Yeah, no. That's our French show.
The French version. Spray-on mud. They use it on each other.
Yeah, but
they
here
get
in
naked
the
and spray mud on each other.
But here in the UK, these clowns use it to spray on their SUVs.
Jeremy Clarkson. He sprays mud on his wife before he can make love to her. that's his name, right? Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah.
He sprays mud on his wife.
Just call him Lardass.
Yeah, Lardass. He sprays mud on his wife. It gets him all horny. It's like, oh, you look like an SUV, honey. Meet my throbbing member. Meet my fifth wheel.
Oh, God. That's
meet really... my inner tube.
You know, none of your jokes are getting any better. Any of your punchlines.
Hey, into Indian chanting because I lived on a reservation for a while.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I was a full-fledged Cherokee.
You were so full of it.
For 5 years.
Yeah, right.
I went through the initiation process. I was had my foreskin removed in a sweat lodge.
Yeah, you see, you know, British people don't realize that.
Hey, Jeremy Clarkson, Florida.
Did you know that?
Spray on mud. What about spray on mud?
They use it to spray on their Chelsea tractors. You know, they look lame because they're all pristine and clean, and they're embarrassed. People are becoming embarrassed that they clearly don't go off-road driving and they don't have country estates. So they're spraying mud on the car to make it look like they've been away for the weekend.
Yeah.
It's like those Italians that... pretend they go on holiday, but because the economy is so bad there and they don't have any money, they actually go out on their patio and they lock their door and they let the post, you know, build up to pretend to their neighbors that they've gone on holiday, but they're actually sleeping on their porches or their patios or their backyard.
Yeah, where do they do that?
This is in Italy.
Yeah, that's right. I read about that. Yeah. They pretend to go on vacation because they're afraid that their neighbors might think they can't afford to go on vacation.
Yeah.
So they hide in their house.
Yeah.
They let the mail stack up outside. Then they stage a big coming back to their house.
And that's
had a great vacation.
And then they use a spray on mud and spray it all over and say, look, I'm all tan. Apparently this is spreading to Germany, too, where the economy is also pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I forget what they call it, but there is like a patio, you know, so there's some sort of vacation word that they use to describe this.
In German?
This fake. No, it's
Italian.
Der
Fledermaus. Der Fledermaus means on vacation in German.
Fledermaus.
The Fledermaus.
You're lying.
Hiya, the Fledermaus. Did you see that story? Actually, I saw on the BBC not too long ago.
What's that?
They had this show that traced the origin of American blues music to Scotland.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that.
And so they're interviewing all these blues men in America and about this, and some obviously white people in Scotland about this. And... you know, there's a bit of a resistance in the American South to believe that the blues came from Scotland.
Yeah.
But
I can understand.
He made a pretty good case for it.
Yeah.
You know, that the underlying rhythmic chord structure and all that stuff that sometimes you hear Pete Doherty use. But he wasn't invited to Live 8, was he?
No.
So how good can that show be?
No, it's because all the wives of all those 80s faded rockers don't want Kate Moss to be there.
No, because, you know, we think about ways to make money. And we think about how in the UK you can make money. Because this is the preoccupation for everyone in the UK. Because the UK is the home of the hedge fund industry. It's home of the corrupt banking industry. And I thought of a good way to make money.
Yeah. You told me this, and I've already patented the idea. It's so fantastic.
That's a great idea to make money.
Yeah.
Apparently, hospital mortality rates in some parts of England are 50% lower than in others.
Uh-huh.
What a great spread betting opportunity.
Exactly. This is how
you go long death in the lower-rated hospitals.
Uh-huh.
You go short death in the high-rated hospitals. And depending on how many people die that week, your spread bet pays off.
Yeah, but it's also a way to protect. It's a great insurance as well for you. If you're in the ambulance and they're bringing you to, oh, we're bringing you to the really bad hospital where everybody dies, you just call your broker, say, yeah, I want to put a short on my life.
I'm going to short my life right now. Massively short my life.
Yeah.
This way, if you die, your heirs get the spread bet payoff.
Yeah.
That's a great way to make money.
Well, and also, you know.
The Cantor Fitzgerald should have been done this before 9/11.
And then they wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah, they lost, 600 bankers on 9/11?
Yeah.
If they had the death spread bets in place by then, they wouldn't have lost all that money.
No. They would not have. But listen, they should do this with the education system, which they're privatizing as well. And apparently, you know, there are all these mothers upset because their children are turning out stupid because, you know, the teachers are bad because they have to be paid less and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But you should take a spread bet. You know, right now in the UK, everybody, you know, a good school in the area increases the value of your house by hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Right.
But you should just spread bet. If you instead of worrying about whether your kid's going to be stupid or not, just take out a spread bet and say, oh, he's in a bad school.
He's, you know, actually, now that you're talking about this, and there's an economist in America, Shiller, I believe his last name is, who famously wrote this book, Irrational Exuberance, right before the crash.
Yeah.
I forget his first name.
Yeah, Robert Shiller or something like that. He's just reissued the book with a new preface talking about the irrational, exuberant housing market.
In the housing market, right. Remember last week we said the UK housing market's going to crash?
And
it just came out this past day that the rate of crash is accelerating.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the UK housing market's going to crash. All these guys at Resonance FM 104.4, these musicians who are squatting, they're going to be happy about this because as their rich sisters and brothers' house goes negative equity, they'll be able to buy it from them because they'll have no money, but they'll have cash, some cash, like $5.
Yeah.
So they'll say they're the squatter, they're a Resonance Radio listener and musician. They've got five pounds to their name.
Yeah.
Their brother, who went into banking, is now worth 500 million pounds.
Uh-huh.
But he's got 800 million pounds in debt.
Uh-huh.
Well, interest rates pop up. And all hell breaks loose on the global finance market. The brother will sell that 500,000 pound house to the other brother for £5 just to buy bread. Mm-hmm. So the squatter, the meek shall inherit the earth.
This is what they say.
This is what it's all about, you see? So if you're listening to Residence FM 104.4, my name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. This is the Truth About Market show. There is hope. You are going to inherit your brother's house, your sister's house. They went into banking and lawyering. You went into music. Don't fret. You're about to get it all. You're going to get all the marbles. You know people here at Residence, that guy Ed? We see him every week. He's downstairs.
Yeah, he's always downstairs. I don't
know. He's always down there.
He just smiles and says hello.
And the man, I'll tell you what about Ed. Ed basically is a man, he dreams about someday a mysterious pizza arriving from nowhere.
Yeah.
And that he's going to be the happiest day of his life.
But he only has 5 pounds.
He only has 5 pounds, but he knows that the pizza, there's a pizza somewhere. I'm going to send him a pizza one of these days.
Are you?
Have it delivered to residents in care of Ed.
Do you think he's a vegetarian?
He would get veggie pizza.
We'll get a Vegemite pizza.
Yeah, Vegemite.
Or Marmite. They like Marmite.
See, now
don't they?
In the UK, it's all about Marmite. In
yeah.
Australia, those Australian losers. I'm sorry. There's one in the room. Yeah, they eat Vegemite. You know, what's that all about?
Uh-huh.
They think just by going from Vegemite to Marmite, they're making a. Why do I get these messages? I'm like the office of the Western Union.
Yeah,
I'm getting cables sent to me to go out to our national audience. This is going out to a national audience, global audience. Hitler was a vegetarian.
Wow.
Okay. Thank you for that important cable,
you know,
from above.
Well, all you
why
to, all
why
you
are
do-
we saying this? Why is that important for this show?
Because
here we are in Residence FM in London. We got some wacky Australian dude. Sending us cablegrams about Hitler and vegetarianism. First of all, Hitler is not a great subject to be talking about in London. I can tell you that.
Why?
Duh! What do you mean, why?
We're not in Germany.
No, but remember.
Anyway.
Let's move on. You know, I'm tired of this whole thing. I'm not happy because the thing's going off the rails.
Okay, but
we're getting
listen.
All these random messages.
Okay, we've got to tell you that our email is thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com, and we got an email last week, by the way, honey.
Yeah.
And Midge Uri, remember
yeah.
we were like, who the hell is
yeah,
Midge
Uri?
Uri?
Yeah.
Well, apparently his name is Midge Ur, like manure, Midger.
A Midger.
Midger.
A Midger.
Midge Ur, and he was with a band called Ultravox. I don't know what they sang, but
yeah.
Send us another email.
Is this like Sharday? Where do you? It's
yeah, yeah.
Sade.
Yeah.
You think her name would be Sade?
Yeah.
But her name is Sade.
Yeah.
Where's the H in Sade? So Uri is really.
Yeah. Well, the Brits
not
do
even
this.
It's not even a word. It's a sound. It's a throttle guttural.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Sound. Mid.
It sounds very French.
I like you to meet my friend Mid. And this is his wife Betty. You know, they're here to meet Mr. and Mrs. Midge.
Speaking of Live 8, there was rumors on Drudge Report yesterday that Michael Jackson is going to be performing there because Michael Jackson has been found not guilty of molesting young Gavin Arviso.
Okay.
So, but one of the jurors said after this trial that, not guilty doesn't mean he's innocent.
Mm.
He thinks... He's innocent. He's guilty, but mm-hmm. not of the crime against Gavin Arviso.
He's guilty of not making any kind of hit records for
and
the
according
last
to,
5 years.
Did you see Barbara O'Meal in the Daily
Barbara
Teller?
Barbara O'Meal? Is that O'Meal. A friend of Midge?
No,
everyone's name is after, why did you just Jones and Smith?
She's the American wife of Lord Conrad Black, Richard Pearl's best mate.
Oh, yeah.
The one that stole all that money from the
like
shareholders.
Robert Maxwell, the 21st century.
Anyway,
Lord
she,
Black.
She wrote a piece in the Daily Telegraph today or yesterday, I forget, but saying, so Michael Jackson slept with these kids and might have molested them, but as long as there was no sexual penetration,
yeah.
What was the harm?
Yeah, that's the Belgian law. They think they're in Belgium. We didn't come, so it's not sexual violation.
Yeah.
We're wearing a rubber. It's not sexually violation.
As long as he makes money for us, that's okay.
Yeah.
She's probably one of these people lining up to buy his library of music.
Do they call it a rubber in the UK?
No, they call it that's what we call in America an eraser. They call it here. They call it
a caftan.
A
caftan.
Something. I forget.
A poncho.
No, it's not a rubber. It's a condom.
A raincoat.
But anyway, Michael Jackson's lawyer, Thomas Mesereau, said...
A duvet.
Yes. Michael Jackson's lawyer says that Jackson will no longer sleep with little boys. He'll no longer invite little boys into his bed.
Yeah.
Because, and this is his quote, it makes him vulnerable to false charges. So Michael Jackson, the 46-year-old freak, is the
vulnerable one.
He's the vulnerable, not the little boys.
And he's joining the Live Aid circus.
Well,
presumably.
This is allegedly.
Yeah.
This is what they say. But
right.
I think it might be a way for him to get some more attention.
Mm.
Michael Jackson says he says he's moving to Africa.
He used to be black, so he should be somewhat familiar with the terrain.
I doubt he's moving to Africa.
I doubt he's moving to Africa.
Maybe he thinks that they won't, you know, if he moves to Somalia like Coca-Cola did.
Yeah,
you know,
Somalia and Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Everything's cash.
Yeah.
You know, no questions asked. There's no government. There's no government. So,
you know, Somalia is an interesting case because there is no government. There is no formal economy.
No.
There is no formal treasury.
No.
And yet Coca-Cola is one of their hugest operations in the world. They've got tankers full of Coke syrup.
Yeah.
And it go in and out of Somalia into this African market with no formal government or economy.
Uh-huh.
It's pure black market.
Yeah.
And, you know, Coca-Cola has been criticized recently by the India Resources Center. Did you see that whole thing in the Wall Street Journal?
Yeah, I did.
The Wall Street Journal ran a front page on the India Resource Center. And Amit, who's the head of the thing? Amit.
Savarastra.
Yeah. He's taking on Coca-Cola. And the Wall Street Journal ran a full-page article about this man with his laptop and how he's going to take down Coca-Cola. And they made it sound like, you know, David and Goliath. And they made it into a bit of a human interest story. Now, apparently, Amit and his buddies took exception to the way the Wall Street Journal was covering the story because, according to him, they didn't take the story seriously enough that the charges of Coca-Cola stealing groundwater in India.
And then contaminating the rest of the groundwater.
Yeah, that these are serious charges, and that the Wall Street Journal was a little bit too flippant in their coverage of this campaign.
Yeah.
And now I know this guy, Amit.
Mm-hmm.
I met with him personally two times.
Mm-hmm.
Once in the city, in the company of a major league hedge fund manager, with the idea that his campaign, why are you holding your breast? What's going on over there? Are you giving yourself an examination?
Yeah.
You have a lump?
Yeah. You know, apparently...
Is your underwire cutting into your torso?
No, we discussed this earlier. I burned my bra, didn't I?
Is it that hickey I gave you?
Yes.
Is it starting to itch?
It's still there. It's still there. It's swollen up. Whatever
you have two nipples on that breast because one's a hickey.
Whatever you have been eating has caused me to come out in a big rash.
Honey. Anyway, so you got this guy, in the Wall Street Journal. So he writes this big piece after the journal comes out. He's critical of the journal for not taking it seriously enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him this was going to happen, and I met with this guy, Amit, in the anti-Coke campaign beforehand for the very simple reason that unless you're willing to talk about the company's stock price, there's no reason for anyone to take you seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You could say the company is burning African babies for a buck in Somalia, and people will still say, well, how's my stock doing?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you talk about the stock price, who cares? And if you're, see, the thing about an activist is you think that your stock and trade is morality and ethical behavior, corporate social responsibility, that you're going to convince these dyed-in-the-wood, ravenous, predatory monopolists that they're going to see Jesus and they're going to start acting like good corporate citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're talking about stock price, forget it, because it's never going to happen. Because the last time I checked, when I looked in the Financial Times, in the big stock table in the back, all that little black type, did I see morality listed anywhere?
No.
Did I see love listed anywhere?
No.
Did I see trust listed anywhere?
No.
Did they trade anywhere in the world?
No.
So therefore, they don't exist. They don't exist. If you run a $100 billion company like Coca-Cola, you don't get to be a $100 billion company like Coca-Cola because there's no such thing as love, trust, or morality or ethics. Plain and simple. Full stop. So if you're an activist, you're never going to get the company to think and recognize those entities as being existent. So therefore, you have only one choice and one choice only. Talk about how your campaign, how the bad groundwater, how the bad labor practices in Colombia, how this and that and everything you don't like about the company is going to affect the stock price.
So
talk about the stock price. What's the risk to the stock price? Then the Wall Street Journal has to talk about the stock price.
Yeah.
Then you have a serious campaign.
Yeah.
Then people will take you seriously. But because activists think, oh, talking about stock prices is going to make it seem like we're greedy, like we're Bob Geldof. Well, That's not true. Yeah. The reality is that the globe, which is so highly leveraged at this point, as we pointed out on this show, with $250 trillion of derivative contracts backed up and collateralized by a mere $65 trillion worth of Earth's natural resources and services, unless you're talking about stock price, you're pissing in the wind. Okay? Let me break it down for you. And in Coke's case, you put it in a bottle and sell it. But you're never getting to get anywhere. So, and I had this argument over and over and over again with activists who think that their morality is somehow going to win the day. Well, your morality is going to cause you to fry to death because global warming is happening, climate change is happening, Earth's destruction of the environment is happening.
And Live Aid is happening.
And Live Aid is going to speed up the process. They're doing more harm than good. Bob Geldof is doing more harm than good. You know, Michael Jackson is a pedophile. He's doing more harm than good. You know, maybe in Belgium they let that thing go by without you know.
that was just a bit of John Cage's silence.
John Cage, silence. You know, we saw the John Cage silence thing performed at the
ICA.
ICA.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very. We'll put a plug for ICA, which stands for the
Contemporary Arts, the Institute of Contemporary Arts.
Institute of Contemporary Arts, the ICA, which is over near the Place
Pall Mall.
Pall Mall.
As they say it. Or Americans would say Pall Mall.
Pall Mall.
the road leading right up to Buckingham Palace.
That's right, that big road. It's the ICA. It's a very good place. They've got good lectures there.
Good movies.
They've got good movies there.
Yeah.
They've got really good books. They got all those cool books with all those cool photos.
Yeah, and good funny postcards.
You can see a picture of Pete Doherty there.
Yeah.
Can't see him at Live 8. You can see Kate Moss there. She's naked.
Yeah, she's always
Lucien
there.
Lucien Freud did a picture of her. She's naked. It's art. You see it at ICA. You see art.
Yeah.
Because she's naked. It must be art.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of naked women, I was appalled. Absolutely appalled.
By what?
That Jamie Oliver... Uh-huh. The lunch school man.
Yeah.
In order to build up the esteem of his wife.
Yeah.
Who's feeling bad about herself.
Yeah.
He's going to have her portrait painted by a Rolling Stone.
Ron Wood.
Uh-huh. And she's going to be naked.
Yeah.
So you've got this aging, rocker, drooling Ron Wood, you know, painting the portrait of Jamie Oliver's wife, who we don't even know her name, do we? Because she's just an object.
Her name is Jules.
She's been objectified. Women are fighting for decades to stop being objectified.
Her name is Jules.
Jamie Oliver, the lunch boy man, is getting his wife to be objectified by Ron Wood, who's the Rolling Stones. I mean, okay, it's a great act. It's a great act, but they're not exactly, you know, known for their female liberation.
Yeah, but this Jamie Oliver is like Gavin Arviso's mother, you know, sending her little boy off to sleep with an aging rock star.
I think you got a point there.
Exactly.
Now, what is it that the women in the UK feel so insecure that they let their husbands put them up to exhibitionist ism by drooling old geezers? They paint these. Now I understand if it was Kate Moss.
Yeah.
Because she's an exhibitionist to begin with. She's a model.
She should be naked.
She's a model. That's
her
business.
Some people should be naked.
But some housefrau. Jamie Lunch's box mother's sister's cousin, wife, whatever. The wife.
The wife.
Why does she have to get naked? Why does she have to get naked?
I don't know.
Because she's feeling flabby?
No.
Who
maybe.
Says so? The drug company?
Exactly.
Jamie the lunch boy?
Exactly.
Why?
I don't know. See, this is, if you have the answer, send it to thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com.
Why can't Ron Wood do a naked portrait of Laura Bush, and especially Laura's Bush?
Whoa.
I'd like to see Laura's Bush painted by Ron Wood. Nice oil painting.
Do you think she shaves?
She's got a Brazilian, from what I understand, from Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
He would know. He's okay. You know, a lot of people don't know that Dick Cheney is actually the son of Lon Chaney.
Who's Lon Chaney?
He played all those famous roles like the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the early history of cinema.
Okay.
The Man with a Thousand Faces. Lon Chaney. And it wasn't, what's his name? Campbell.
Naomi Campbell?
The anthropologist. The
Alistair Campbell?
No. The writer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't him.
No.
Lon Chaney, the hero, the man with a thousand faces. Dick Cheney is his son. A lot of people don't know that. Dick Cheney told me personally, Laura Bush has got a Brazilian wax on her bush. That's what I heard. I also heard
we're
that.
We're definitely going to be served with an audio asbo.
They've got an audio asbo. Condoleezza Rice waxes her butt. She's got the smoothest, firmest, tightest, blackest, hairless butt in Washington. And I'm turned on by it.
Oh, God. Okay, we are The Truth About Markets. We're going to be here again, once again, next Saturday, 7 o'clock. And I'm Stacey Herbert, and this is Max Kaiser.
Bye, y'all.
See ya. Bye.